It was Bill's turn to have nightmares now. Dreams in which Charlie Silverman died over and over again. Knocked out of his Red Ryder cowboy boots and was flipped onto the hood of the rusty Hudson Hornet the drunk had been piloting. Charlie Silverman's head and the Hudson's windshield had met with explosive force. Both had shattered. The drunk driver who owned a candy store in Milford suffered a heart attack shortly after being taken into custody. Perhaps it was the sight of Charlie Silverman's brains drying on his pants. And his lawyer was quite successful at the trial with his "this man has been punished enough" theme. The drunk was given 60 days suspended and lost his privilege to operate a motor vehicle in the state of Connecticut for 5 years, which was about as long as Bill Shelburne's nightmares lasted. The monkey was hidden away again in the back closet. Bill never noticed it was gone from his shelf, or if he did, he never said. Hal felt safe for a while. He even began to forget about the monkey again, or to believe it had only been a bad dream. But when he came home from school on the afternoon his mother died, it was back on his shelf, symbols poised, grinning down at him. He approached it slowly, as if from outside himself, as if his own body had been turned into a wind-up toy at the sight of the monkey. He saw his hand reach out and take it down. He felt the nappy fur crinkle under his hand, but the feeling was muffled, mere pressure as if someone had shot him full of Novocaine. He could hear his breathing quick and dry, like the rattle of wind through straw. He turned it over and grasped the key, and years later he would think that his drugged fascination was like that of a man who puts a six-shooter with one loaded chamber against a closed and jittering eyelid and pulls the trigger. "No, don't. Let it alone. Throw it away. Don't touch it." He turned the key, and in the silence he heard a perfect, tiny series of winding-up clicks. When he let the key go, the monkey began to clap its cymbals together, and he could feel its body jerking, bend and jerk, as if it were alive. It was alive, writhing in his hand like some loathsome pygmy. And the vibration he felt through its balding brown fur was not that of turning cogs, but the beating of its heart. With a groan, Hal dropped the monkey and backed away, fingernails digging into the flesh under his eyes, palms pressed to his mouth. He stumbled over something and nearly lost his balance. Then he would have been right down on the floor with it, his bulging blue eyes looking into its glassy hazel ones. He scrambled toward the door, backed through it, slammed it, and leaned against it. Suddenly, he bolted for the bathroom and vomited. It was Mrs. Stuckey from the helicopter plant who brought the news and stayed with him those first two endless nights until Aunt Ida got down from Maine. Their mother had died of a brain embolism in the middle of the afternoon. She had been standing at the water cooler with a cup of water in one hand and had crumpled as if shot, still holding the paper cup in one hand. With the other, she had clawed at the water cooler and had pulled the great glass bottle of Poland water down with her. It had shattered, but the plant doctor, who came on the run, said later that he believed Mrs. Shelburne was dead before the water had soaked through the dress and her underclothes to wet her skin. The boys were never told any of this, but Hal knew anyway. He dreamed it again and again on the long nights following his mother's death. "You still have trouble getting to sleep, little brother?" Bill had asked him, and Hal supposed Bill thought all the thrashing and bad dreams had to do with their mother dying so suddenly. And that was right, but only partly right. There was the guilt, the certain deadly knowledge that he had killed his mother by winding the monkey up on that sunny after-school afternoon. When Hal finally fell asleep, his sleep must have been deep. When he awoke, it was nearly noon. Petey was sitting cross-legged in a chair across the room, methodically eating an orange section by section and watching a game show on TV. Hal swung his legs out of bed, feeling as if someone had punched him down into sleep, and then punched him back out of it. His head throbbed. "Where's your mom, Petey?" Petey glanced around. "She and Dennis went shopping. I said I'd hang out here with you." You always talk in your sleep, Dad? Hal looked at his son cautiously. No. What did I say? I couldn't make it out. It scared me a little. Well, here I am in my right mind again, Hal said, and managed a small grin. Petey grinned back, and Hal felt simple love for the boy again, an emotion that was bright and strong and uncomplicated. He wondered why he had always been able to feel so good about Petey, to feel he understood Petey and could help him, and why Dennis seemed a window too dark to look through, a mystery in his ways and habits, the sort of boy he could not understand, because he had never been that sort of boy. It was too easy to say that the move from California had changed Dennis, or that his thoughts froze. The monkey. The monkey was sitting on the windowsill, symbols poised. Hal felt his heart stop dead in his chest and then suddenly begin to gallop. His vision wavered, and his throbbing head began to ache ferociously. It had escaped from the suitcase and now stood on the windowsill, grinning at him. Thought you got rid of me, didn't you? But you've thought that before, haven't you? Yes, he thought sickly. Yes, I have. Pete, did you take that monkey out of my suitcase? He asked, knowing the answer already. He had locked the suitcase and had put the key in his overcoat pocket. Petey glanced at the monkey, and something, Hal thought it was unease, passed over his face. No, he said. Mom put it there. Mom did? Yeah. She took it from you. She laughed. Took it from me? What are you talking about? You had it in bed with you. I was brushing my teeth, but Dennis saw. He laughed too. He said you looked like a baby with a teddy bear. Hal looked at the monkey. His mouth was too dry to swallow. He'd had it in bed with him? In bed? That loathsome fur against his cheek? Maybe against his mouth? Those glaring eyes staring into his sleeping face? Those grinning teeth near his neck? On his neck? Dear God. He turned abruptly and went to the closet. The Samsonite was there, still locked. The key was still in his overcoat pocket. Behind him, the TV snapped off. He came out of the closet slowly. Peter was looking at him soberly. Daddy, I don't like that monkey, he said, his voice almost too low to hear. Nor do I, Hal said. Petey looked at him closely to see if he was joking and saw that he was not. He came to his father and hugged him tight. Hal could feel him trembling. Petey spoke into his ear then very rapidly, as if afraid he might not have courage enough to say it again, or that the monkey might overhear. It's like it looks at you. Like it looks at you no matter where you are in the room. And if you go into the other room, it's like it's looking through the wall at you. I kept feeling like it wanted me for something. Petey shuddered. Hal held him tight. Like it wanted you to wind it up, Hal said. Pete nodded violently. It isn't really broken, is it, Dad? Sometimes it is, Hal said, looking over his son's shoulder at the monkey. But sometimes it still works. I kept wanting to go over there and wind it up. It was so quiet, and I thought, I can't. It'll wake up Daddy. But I still wanted to, and I went over, and I touched it. And I hate the way it feels. But I liked it, too. And it was like it was saying, wind me up, Petey, we'll play. Your father isn't gonna wake up. He's never gonna wake up at all. Wind me up. Wind me up. The boy suddenly burst into tears. It's bad, I know it is. There's something wrong with it. Can't we throw it out, Daddy, please? The monkey grinned its endless grin at Hal. He could feel Petey's tears between them. Late morning sun glinted off the monkey's brass cymbals. The light reflected upward and put sunstreaks on the motel's plain white stucco ceiling. What time did your mother think she and Dennis would be back, Petey? Around 1. He swiped at his red eyes with his shirt sleeve, looking embarrassed at his tears. But he wouldn't look at the monkey. I turned on the TV, he whispered, and I turned it up loud. That was all right, Petey. How would it have happened, Hal wondered. Heart attack? An embolism like my mother? What? Doesn't really matter, does it? And on the heels of that, another colder thought. Get rid of it, he says. Throw it out. But can it be gotten rid of, ever? The monkey grinned mockingly at him, its symbols held a foot apart. Did it suddenly come to life on the night Aunt Ida died? He wondered suddenly. Was that the last sound she heard? The muffled jang, jang, jang of the monkey beating its cymbals together, up in the black attic while the wind whistled along the drainpipe? Maybe not so crazy, Hal said slowly to his son. Go get your flight bag, Petey. Petey looked at him uncertainly. What are we gonna do? Maybe it can be got rid of. Maybe permanently, maybe just for a while, a long while or a short while. Maybe it's just gonna come back, and that's all this is about. But maybe we can say goodbye to it for a long time. It took 20 years to come back this time. It took 20 years to get out of the well. We're gonna go for a ride, Hal said. He felt fairly calm, but somehow too heavy inside his skin. Even his eyeballs seemed to have gained weight. But first I want you to take your flight bag out there, by the edge of the parking lot, and find 3 or 4 good-sized rocks. Put them inside the bag and bring it back to me. Got it? Understanding flickered in Petey's eyes. All right, Daddy. Hal glanced at his watch. It was nearly 12:15. Hurry, I want to be gone before your mother gets back.
Where are we going?
To Uncle Will's and Aunt Ida's, Hal said. To the home place. Hal went into the bathroom, looked behind the toilet, and got the bowl brush leaning there. He took it back to the window and stood there with it in his hand like a cut-rate magic wand. He looked out at Petey in his Melton shirt jacket, crossing the parking lot with his flight bag, Delta showing clearly in white letters against the blue field. A fly bumbled in an upper corner of the window, slow and stupid with the end of the warm season. Hal knew how it felt. He watched Petey hunt up 3 good-sized rocks and then start back across the parking lot. A car came around the corner of the motel, a car that was moving too fast, much too fast, and without thinking, reaching with the kind of reflex a good shortstop shows going to his right, the hand holding the brush flashed down as if in a karate chop and stopped. The cymbals closed soundlessly on his intervening hand, and he felt something in the air. Something like rage. The car's brakes screamed. Petey flinched back. The driver motioned to him impatiently as if what had almost happened was Petey's fault, and Petey ran across the parking lot with his collar flapping and into the motel's rear entrance. Sweat was running down Hal's chest. He felt it on his forehead like a drizzle of oily rain. The cymbals pressed coldly against his hand, numbing it. Go on, he thought grimly. Go on, I can wait all day, until hell freezes over if that's what it takes. The cymbals drew apart and came to rest. Hal heard one faint click from inside the monkey. He withdrew the brush and looked at it. Some of the white bristles had blackened as if singed. The fly bumbled and buzzed, trying to find the cold October sunshine that seemed so close. Pete came bursting in, breathing quickly, cheeks rosy. I got 3 good ones, Dad, he broke off. Are you all right, Daddy? Fine, Hal said. Bring the bag over. Hal hooked the table by the sofa over to the window with his foot, so it stood below the sill, and put the flight bag on it. He spread its mouth open like lips. He could see the stones Petey had collected glimmering inside. He used the toilet bowl brush to hook the monkey forward. It teetered for a moment and then fell into the bag. There was a faint jing as one of its cymbals struck one of the rocks. Dad? Daddy? Petey sounded frightened. Hal looked around at him. Something was different. Something had changed. What was it? Then he saw the direction of Petey's gaze and he knew. The buzzing of the fly had stopped. It lay dead on the windowsill. Did the monkey do that? Petey whispered. Come on, Hal said, zipping the bag shut. I'll tell you while we ride out to the home place. How can we go? Mom and Dennis took the car. Don't worry, Hal said, and ruffled Petey's hair. He showed the desk clerk his driver's license and a $20 bill. After taking Hal's Texas Instruments digital watch as collateral, the clerk handed Hal the keys to his own car, a battered AMC Gremlin. As they drove east on Route 302 toward Casco, Hal began to talk, haltingly at first, then a little faster. He began by telling Petey that his father had probably brought the monkey home with him from overseas as a gift for his sons. It wasn't a particularly unique toy. There was nothing strange or valuable about it. There must have been hundreds of thousands of wind-up monkeys in the world, some made in Hong Kong, some in Taiwan, some in Korea. But somewhere along the line, perhaps even in the dark back closet of the house in Connecticut, where the two boys had begun their growing up, something had happened to the monkey. Something bad. It might be, Hal said as he tried to coax the clerk's gremlin up past 40, that some bad things, maybe even most bad things, weren't even really awake and aware of what they were. He left it there because that was probably as much as Petey could understand. But his mind continued on its own course. He thought that most evil might be very much like a monkey, full of clockwork that you wind up. The clockwork turns, the cymbals begin to beat, the teeth grin, the stupid glass eyes laugh, or appear to laugh. He told Petey about finding the monkey, but little more. He did not want to terrify his already scared boy any more than he was already. The story thus became disjointed, not really clear. But Petey asked no questions. Perhaps he was filling in the blanks for himself, Hal thought, in much the same way that he had dreamed his mother's death over and over, although he had not been there. Uncle Will and Aunt Ida had both been there for the funeral. Afterward, Uncle Will had gone back to Maine. It was harvest time, and Aunt Ida had stayed on for 2 weeks with the boys to neaten up her sister's affairs before bringing them back to Maine. But more than that, she spent the time making herself known to them. They were so stunned by their mother's sudden death that they were nearly comatose. When they couldn't sleep, she was there with warm milk. When Hal woke at 3 a.m. with nightmares, nightmares in which his mother approached the water cooler without seeing the monkey that floated and bobbed in its cool sapphire depths, grinning and clapping its cymbals, each converging pair of sweeps leaving trails of bubbles behind. She was there when Bill came down with first a fever and then a rash of painful mouth sores and then hives 3 days after the funeral. She was there. She made herself known to the boys. And before they rode the bus from Hartford to Portland with her, both Bill and Hal had come to her separately and wept on her lap while she held them and rocked them. And the bonding began. The day before they left Connecticut for good to go down Maine, as it was called in those days, the ragman came in his old ratty truck and picked up the huge pile of useless stuff that Bill and Hal had carried out to the sidewalk from the back closet. When all the junk had been set out by the curb for pickup, Aunt Ida had asked them to go through the back closet again and pick out any souvenirs or remembrances that they wanted specially to keep. "We just don't have room for it all, boys," she told them, and Hal supposed Bill had taken her at her word and had gone through all those fascinating boxes their father had left behind one final time. Hal did not join his older brother. Hal had lost his taste for the back closet. A terrible idea had come to him during those first 2 weeks of mourning. Perhaps his father hadn't just disappeared or run away because he had an itchy foot and had discovered marriage wasn't for him. Maybe the monkey had gotten him. When he heard the ragman's truck roaring and farting and backfiring its way down the block, Hal nerved himself, snatched the monkey from his shelf where it had been since the day his mother died. He had not dared to touch it until then, not even to throw it back into the closet, and ran downstairs with it. Neither Bill nor Aunt Ida saw him. Sitting on top of a barrel filled with broken souvenirs and moldy books was the Ralston Purina carton filled with similar junk. Hal had slammed the monkey back into the box it had originally come out of, hysterically daring it to begin clapping its cymbals. "Go on, go on, I dare you, double dare you." But the monkey only waited there, leaning back nonchalantly, as if expecting a bus, grinning its awful, knowing grin. Hal stood by, a small boy in old corduroy pants and scuffed Buster Browns, as the ragman, an Italian gent, who wore a crucifix and whistled through the space in his teeth, began loading boxes and barrels in an ancient truck with wooden stake sides. Hal watched as he lifted both the barrel and the Ralston Purina box balanced atop it. He watched the monkey disappear into the bed of the truck. He watched as the rag man climbed back into the cab, blew his nose mightily into the palm of his hand, wiped his hand with a huge red handkerchief, and started the truck's engine with a roar and a blast of oily blue smoke. He watched the truck draw away, and a great weight had dropped away from his heart. He actually felt it go. He had jumped up and down twice as high as he could jump, his arms spread, palms held out, and if any of the neighbors had seen him, they would have thought it odd, almost to the point of blasphemy, perhaps. Why is that boy jumping for joy? For that was surely what this was. A jump for joy can hardly be disguised. They surely would have asked themselves, with his mother not even a month in her grave? He was doing it because the monkey was gone, gone forever. Or so he had thought. Not 3 months later, Aunt Ida had sent him up into the attic to get boxes of Christmas decorations. And as he crawled around looking for them, getting the knees of his pants dusty, he had suddenly come face to face with it again. And his wonder and terror had been so great that he had to bite sharply into the side of his hand to keep from screaming or fainting dead away. There it was, grinning its toothy grin, cymbals poised a foot apart and ready to clap, leaning nonchalantly back against one corner of a Ralston Purina carton as if waiting for a bus, seeming to say, "Thought you got rid of me, didn't you? But I'm not that easy to get rid of, Hal. I like you, Hal. You were made for each other. Just a boy and his pet monkey, a couple of good old buddies. And somewhere south of here, there's a stupid old Italian rag man lying in a claw-footed tub with his eyeballs bulging and his dentures half popped out of his mouth, his screaming mouth. A rag man who smells like a burned-out Exide battery. He was saving me for his grandson, Hal. He put me on the bathroom shelf with his soap and his razor and his Burma shave and the Philco radio he listened to the Brooklyn Dodgers on. And I started to clap. And one of my cymbals hit that old radio and into the tub it went. And then I came to you, Hal. I worked my way along the country roads at night and the moonlight shone off my teeth at 3 in the morning. And I left many people dead at many scenes. I came to you, Hal. I'm your Christmas present. So wind me up. Who's dead? Is it Bill? Is it Uncle Will? Is it you, Hal? Is it you?" Hal had backed away, grimacing madly, eyes rolling, and nearly fell going downstairs. He told Aunt Ida he hadn't been able to find the Christmas decorations. It was the first lie he had ever told her, and she had seen the lie in his face, but had not asked him why he had told it, thank God. And later, when Bill came in, she asked him to look, and he brought the Christmas decorations down. Later, when they were alone, Bill hissed at him he was a dummy who couldn't find his own ass with both hands and a flashlight. Hal said nothing. Hal was pale and silent, only picking at his supper. And that night, he dreamed of the monkey again, one of its cymbals striking the Philco radio, as it babbled out Dean Martin, singing, "When in the moon he to you I, like a big pizza pie at Samore." The radio tumbling into the bathtub as the monkey grinned and beat its cymbals together with a jang, and a jang, and a jang. Only it wasn't the Italian ragman who was in the tub when the water turned electric. It was him. Hal and his son scrambled down the embankment behind the home place to the boathouse that jutted out over the water on its old pilings. Hal had the flight bag in his right hand. His throat was dry. His ears were attuned to an unnaturally keen pitch. The bag was very heavy. "Hal, set down the flight bag. Don't touch that," he said. Hal felt in his pockets for the ring of keys Bill had given him and found one neatly labeled Bee House on a scrap of adhesive tape. The day was clear and cold, windy, the sky a brilliant blue. The leaves of the trees that crowded up to the verge of the lake had gone every bright fall shade from blood red to school bus yellow. They talked in the wind. Leaves swirled around Petey's sneakers as he stood anxiously by, and Hal could smell November just downwind, with winter crowding close behind it. The key turned in the padlock, and he pulled the swing doors open. Memory was strong. He didn't even have to look to kick down the wooden block that held the door open. The smell in here was all summer, canvas and bright wood, a lingering, lusty warmth. Uncle Will's rowboat was still here, the oars neatly shipped, as if he had last loaded it with his fishing tackle and 2 6-packs of Black Label yesterday afternoon. Bill and Hal had both gone out fishing with Uncle Will many times, but never together. Uncle Will maintained the boat was too small for three. The red trim, which Uncle Will had touched up each spring, was now faded and peeling, though, and spiders had spun silk in the boat's bow. Hal laid hold of the boat and pulled it down the ramp to the little shingle of beach. The fishing trips had been one